Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working
at... An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, The Truth Straight Up, with me, Julie Hayden, and Chuck Bonnywell, who is making his way down to the world headquarters as we speak, wrapping some stuff up there. All kinds of stuff to talk about today. We'll be bringing you up to date. Chuck went to the assembly over the weekend, and also pretty interesting, Diana DeGette is not doing very well in the Democrat primary race, which is prompting the establishment side of the Democrat Party to kind of freak out, much like the establishment side in the Republican Party freaks out. But why don't I start off, Ash App, Ash in America, we've had her on many times before. She's sort of an election integrity expert guru, had really an extraordinary report. The clerk of the largest county has withdrawn from the gold standard clerk election, county clerk association. And apparently it's not so gold standard after all. So Ash, welcome to the show. I wanted to talk about this. I mean, this
Paso is not the biggest county,
but it revealed stuff that we've been saying for a long time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is a story of outside influence, external influence pressuring the clerks. And, you know, we've talked about this before, the fact that Matt Crane wears the Clerks Association as a skin suit for his political agenda. Seems like from the resignation letter that I published last week, got through open records requests, the actual resignation letter from Clerk Schleicher resigning from his leadership position at the CCCA, as well as the withdrawing El Paso County from the CCCA, that is in fact true. It's a small club. They're driving policy. They're, you know, making up stories about why he, as the vice president, can't be in the meetings. And he had enough, it seems.
Well, and you know, they've been shoving down our throats that it's the, starting with Wayne Williams, a Republican, and all of these, well, it's a gold standard. And the closer you look, the closer people have, it seems to me, potential financial ties to the vendors and people involved in the election system, which seems to me to be a conflict of interest. I mean, is it, so Matt Crane's wife, she's got some connections, right?
Lisa Flanagan Crane worked for, I don't believe she's still there, but she worked for, I think it was Sequoia and then Dominion Voting Systems. Yes.
Okay. Right. So right there, it's like, so anything Matt Crane tells us about that is suspect, but you're going to say, oh yeah, my wife is corrupt and crooked. And you know, it was
not just the wife. So Matt Crane was the poster boy for Global Mobile Voting. His face is quite literally on the poster that they had. We saw this at, well, I wasn't there, but my sources were on the ground at NASS in August of 2021, the National Association of Secretaries of State. That's where we found Matt Crane's face on the Global Mobile poster selling mobile voting solutions, as well as Wayne Williams. You mentioned, family members being all invested. Wayne Williams, at the time he was the city councilman at large in Colorado Springs, his wife sitting on the county commissioner board in El Paso County, that of course has oversight of election funding, right? He was a senior advisor at Runbeck Services. And of course, Runbeck is used in El Paso County. So it's very incestuous, this industry.
Well, the problem has been, quite frankly, that Republican clerks have traditionally attracted every rhino there's ever been. You can go back to Donna Davidson of Buchanan. You can just, year after year after year, Republicans would nominate a quote-unquote good government secretary of state or clerks locally, all of which worked very hand in hand with Democrats to improve the system, make easier voting, to allow
improve.
More... yes, improve.
We're going to help America vote, guys.
That's right.
Help America vote.
One in America or not in America.
So, I mean, you know, it's just gotten down to the pathetic thing that they can't, luckily, Republicans can't be Secretary of State. I think it's been made a criminal law.
Well, don't forget, Chuck, that we had Republican secretaries of state. Scott Gessler, Republican
Right.
Secretary of State, brought us all mail-in ballots in
That's right.
2013.
Yeah.
And his, Wayne Williams, who we were just talking about, Republican Secretary of State, mandated Dominion voting systems in
There
the
we go.
state.
There we go.
The Republicans have been doing a great job of selling out their party. And it's
Yeah.
probably one of the most
Selling out
important.
the people.
Yeah, well, the party, the people voting, everything else. And Matt Crane has been obviously a stooge for the industry. And they get away with it. And I have no idea why, but
Well, because I think.
it's the key to controlling elections, and they control elections in Colorado. And if you control an election, you often are the people who's, it doesn't matter how people vote, it's
Who
who's doing
counts?
the counting, and they're doing the
Matters who
counting.
counts? Yep,
So
Joseph
it made it,
Stalin, I think.
yeah, that would be a Stalinistic kind of concept. Let me finish.
Thought you were.
And I think we really, I mean, I think it's great that this guy resigned from the organization because just to belong to it after, quite frankly, it had been neutered to the point where it's worthless. The Secretary of State has basically raped them of any actual role in the election process.
Yeah, with the laws. Well,
Yeah.
and to kind of jump in on that, and Ash, you can kind of explain this, because he explained it, I think, in his resignation letter. I mean, there's been an enormous amount of pressure put on any clerk. Look at Tina Peters, right? Who dares raise any kind of question about anything, right? And so, I mean, he talked a little bit about that, right?
He did. So I spoke to Tina Peters this morning.
Oh, I know.
I will.
We're gonna let you
I,
tease that.
yeah, I
So.
was very excited about that because I haven't had. I've been blocked from being able to see her or access her or visit her, and I haven't spoken to her since before my trial, July 2024. So it was wonderful to hear her voice, and we got cut off because the jail people came in and said she had to do something. So I'm hoping she calls me back. But yeah, he talked about sort of this central group of controllers. He mentioned Matt Crane and Carly Kappes as kind of gatekeeping access to information and to meetings. Now he was the vice president of the CCCA, and one of his central claims was that he was prohibited from attending the meetings with the Department of State. And the reason he was given was that the Department of State had trust issues with him, that he wasn't Yeah, that he wasn't trusted. So he reached out to the people that he knows in the Department of State, and they said, well, that's not true. And so he, yeah, so Schleicher came to the conclusion, according to his both the resignation letter and the letter that he sent to the clerks, both are up on my Substack, ashinamerica.substack.com. He came to the conclusion that this was a fabrication of Matt Crane and Carly Kappes, who were attempting to gatekeep what was happening. Now, folks will remember the CCCA has come out with several letters in recent weeks. Anytime. So at first it was, we're going to transfer Tina Peters to federal custody out of state custody. CCCA comes out and says, no, we can't do that. We don't support it. She's a threat to democracy. Then there was the question of the pardon. Then there was the question of the clemency. And they come out at the same time. In the last one on the clemency, Elbert County Clerk Rhonda Braun, who has been the target of weaponization of government from the Department of State as well, she came out and said, this letter does not represent me, and I wasn't allowed to provide input into it. This isn't the clerks. I'm paraphrasing Rhonda Braun right now, but this wasn't the clerks. This is Matt Crane and, his core group. When you consider that that's NGOs, that's external, unaccountable, no oversight, no open records requests, NGOs that are effectively driving the policy for all of the clerk, and also they are the subject matter expert, the point of escalation for all things elections, we've got a real problem.
Oh, we do, because the thing is the clerk's office, it's not even supposed to be bipartisan. It's supposed to be nonpartisan. And instead, I mean, they've turned it into to a weapon, and the Clerks Association, which they use to kind of give it a patina of being nonpartisan, is the most weaponized of all.
Well, it is bipartisan because they have lots of tool. Clerks are
Unipartisan.
Republicans, and
Well, yeah.
thank God the El Paso one isn't, but there's so many others that are. It's a revolting thing. And the Democrats have figured out a long time ago to have the NGOs basically take over the Secretary of State's duties and just make sure it's all Democrat. And why Republicans, it has to do at the national level because locally we're too pathetic, but in the national level, we can stop that.
Yeah, and you have to like kind of consider this from the clerk's perspective, particularly smaller county rural clerks. Our elections are so centralized and complicated, so technology enabled that they can't be experts in this, right? So they'd have to go back to school, learn a new skill set to be experts in Colorado elections by design, because they have been centralized. You know, centralization creates complexity, and complexity breeds and hides corruption. We've been saying this for years, and that is true. So the clerks are going to fight to keep the CCCA. They're going to defend the CCCA largely because it's a great source of resources for them.
Okay.
They have the escalation point. If there's a problem, they know who to call. They get knowledge sharing. They get professional development. They get the camaraderie. They get the communications platform that allows them to have access to all. And the idea of that going away for them is daunting. And so that's something as we consider what kind of change we, the people, want in this domain, we need to keep them in mind as, you know, core stakeholders in that.
Oh, that's a good point. Well, I want to turn to something else because you had yet another column up. So everybody, you need to go to Ash's Substack column, raising, and actually great minds must think alike, because I had been noticing this myself. It's like all of a sudden, Jenna Griswold, it's like if you're a Democrat, we love Jenna Griswold. We love Jenna Griswold. She's a rising star, blah, 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 right? All of a sudden now, everyone hates Jenna Griswold. It's like somebody called, there was a memo, a Democrat memo that went out and said, no, we don't like her anymore. We hate her. And you have a column about that too. And I had noticed that too and saying, what's going on with that?
It's been shifting for a while, and I was actually writing this piece. I went on Richard Randall's radio show that on Friday and told I like said he's like, "What are you working on?" And I'm like, "Well, I'm working on something going on with like what's going on with the stories about Jenna Griswold." Well, the next morning, this whole staffer thing broke, right? And you can see everybody's on board. Jenna's got to go, and it's weird. And it's you know the easy answer is well, the primary took place, and it's political calculus, and she's still too competitive, and we want her to be gone. So politically, we're choosing, you know, the Democrats are choosing a different candidate. It doesn't solve it for me because it's so coordinated and it's been like, as you said, it's been building for a while, this shift in the narrative. I think what's happening, which is my you know, my thesis of the piece that I published today, which is chock full of receipts. So all of the
All
links,
there.
all of the things that I say, the links that are in there to the original reporting on all of those different points. But my thesis is that the Jenna Griswold is much more valuable under the bus than pretending to drive it right now. And so they're going to try and convince the people that they've been given change, try to convince the people that there has been accountability of some sort. But all the people like Matt Crane, like
Right.
the staffers in the office, Andrew Klein now is the new Chris Beall. Chris Beall got to kind of slink away, cycle off into the
Yeah, got kicked
sunset,
out of my
right?
election. Yeah,
That was
They're
good.
all going to walk and be fine.
Yeah.
And Jenna Griswold is going to go under the bus. Maybe she gets off with just losing her AG race. But if there is accountability coming for the weaponization of government and the stolen elections and all of the corruption, Anderson versus Griswold, all of the things that were done out of CDOS over the past several years, if there is accountability, my theory is that it's coming for Jenna and everybody else is going to be like, oh, wow, we didn't know she was so corrupt.
Well,
Well,
and you know
here
what? Let me finish every once in a while and talk. It really would be
she
nice.
is.
Jesus Christ. Forget it. I forgot what the hell I was saying. This is where you interrupted me for 4 billion times. Want to do the show?
Yeah, I'd like to
Okay.
do the show because I'm not doing the show
Sorry.
now and I can't get a word in edgewise with her.
I answer a question? Sorry, Ash.
No, you don't be sorry. Sorry to me, not to ask.
The things I think that you point out in your article is that all of this stuff that's coming out is not new. It's all being presented as it's new, but it's not new. And I think you're right. I think what they're going to be going with is, guys, we have the gold standard. It's Jenna that's the problem. She's not gold standard.
But
Everything
it's
else
got to be
is.
much deeper than that because they don't care it's a gold standard. They don't care whether Jenna sucks. They don't care whether Jenna's corrupt. They don't care that the Secretary of State's office is viewed as corrupt. It must mean that somebody doesn't like her as AG. Somebody thinks whoever's going to replace her is going to be much worse as the AG. But it can't be Democrats all of a sudden coming to the realization that they should be a good government party and the Secretary of State's office wasn't run properly. I mean, they're just not those kind of people. That's not who they are.
Yeah, I mean, Jen is not running the Secretary of State's office, though. That's the thing, right? I mean, I had Chris Beall
Well,
under oath at my
even as
trial,
the
and it.
sacrificial lamb, even if it's a sacrificial lamb.
Well, yeah,
They
that's
don't
my
care.
point, is that they'll throw her under the bus and say, well, we solved the problem, but she was not the problem. She is not the problem in the Department of State. Painting Jenna Griswold as the reason it's toxic, as the reason all the staff feel uncomfortable and all of these other things. There's a lot more than that, right? But just on those central claims, Chris Beall was the chief of staff. He was responsible for all staff. He said that under oath in federal court in my trial that he had oversight of all the staff. Also has oversight, had oversight of all transparency, all Quora request approvals.
Oh, wow.
Buck stops with me unless a court overrules me, is what he said when I asked him about it when he was under oath. And so this idea that getting rid of Jenna, I know from our open records of the stuff that was involved in our case, Jenna doesn't come up at all. And if you ask anybody who's done open records on Department of State, Jenna Griswold doesn't have communications. It's like she's never sent an email. You can't find any communication. She's my working theory on her for a long time has been that she's this isolated political product. And the actual running of things is done by the careers in the Department of State, but also in the AG's office. Chris Beall was the outside counsel for Jenna Griswold before he came in to run the office in March 8th of 2021 is when he came in
But
to
who's
run the
controlling Chris
office.
Beall?
Well, Chris Beall kind of slunk away very quietly in the wake of the BIOS password scandal. I had the opportunity to sit next to him at Mike Lindell's trial last summer, and I asked him. So he comes in, and the last time I'd seen him, I was cross-examining him. And he comes in, and there's
None of
no
them
other
are
seat.
independent. Chris Beall's not an independent actor. Whoever replaced him is not an independent actor. I'm not sure it's the governor. Is it other people in the Democratic? Is it national DNC or someone else? But they're just not rogue independent agents
Yeah.
running the Secretary of State's office. They're just not.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. Who replaced him is Andrew Klein, former Perkins Coie political
Oh, that's
animal for
interesting.
the Clinton campaign and other roles. Damage control. We broke that story as well, that Chris Beall had left because they didn't tell us. They didn't do a press
Oh,
release.
that's
They
right.
didn't announce it. It was all of a sudden the Deputy Secretary of State's name on the masthead of press releases had changed. But we didn't get notification about it happening. He just kind of slunk away. And I asked him about it. He sat next to me for a few hours at the Lindell trial last summer, and he said, "I'm done. I'm going to be a lawyer. I just want to, he's going to teach law at DU,
Oh, good.
focus on the
Excellent.
things. Just yeah,
Excellent. That's
just gonna
what
ride off into the sunset."
we need.
Well,
Well, he's not going to run off in the sunset. He gets a job with some law firm to corrupt some more things because he's good at corruption and that those people are valuable. So they'll bring him back doing lots of different things other than polluting young minds. I'm sure he can engage in other activities.
what?
The one good part. And it's incredibly small. I mean, incredibly small. But the Supreme Court is going to take a slight niche into the mail ballot fraud operation. And pretty clear from the arguments of the Supreme Court, they're going to strike down being able to count ballots that don't arrive on at the polling place on the day of election. So that's it's small. And of course, the Democrat judges were, oh no, who cares when it arrives? It's all good. It's all good.
So it's already the law here, though. We don't accept, Colorado does not accept ballots after 7 p.m. on election day. They will count them. It's our statute that they will count the ballots until they're done, and they have to. They can't stop counting until they're done, but they cannot accept ballots after 7 p.m. on election day. So, in terms of the impact of that SCOTUS decision on us, it's not a ton of
That's a
impact here in
little, and
Colorado.
if the SAVE Act gets approved, and
It's a
that's a
big one.
long, long
Yeah.
shot, it'll get rid of mail ballot elections. And if you get rid of mail ballot elections, you will actually have be able to have a Republican who could win, maybe possibly statewide. Jacob indicates I thought voters of Colorado approved an all mail ballot can be used. Yeah, they did. But that doesn't make it any less crooked. They might have proved, we'll massacre all Irish people. But it's a practical matter, them approving it by a very small margin. And then they added on the key to it, which is the ballot harvesting element, really ended the Republican Party in Colorado. The fact that the Colorado Republican Party was in on it, did not fight it, did not, ever really protest it. And today you can get most, you ask most Republican rhinos and they think mail ballot elections are just great, and we should never change them. And that's really why Colorado is so deep blue. I mean, it's become so deep blue because your pink rhinos really have controlled so much in Colorado. And I don't know when that's ever going to change. I mean, we fight endlessly at the state party level, and the grassroots have maybe 55, 45, but there's an incredible percentage of Republicans who are really happy with crooking the ballot for Democrats, and it's a
I don't
strange.
think they know any better. So here's the thing is we don't know how people in Colorado vote. We have no idea because elections are a black box. And so we know what we're told the people decided, but we don't know what they
Well,
decided
they had to corrupt the 2014 election.
on, right, but elections have been rigged for a long time. The 2002 HAVA Act gave birth to the elections industry, but the reason for that was the 2000 election with the hanging chads, and the reason for the hanging chads was the paper stock. So there's allegations all the way down. It's turtles all the way down with elections. However, I want to just go back to what you said. So the SAVE Act will give us verifiable voters, right? We will know who electors are. That's a huge thing because the crux of all of this is fake voters. It is the inflated registrations and not having any fidelity of the voter rolls. And that is a big, big thing. Clay Higgins has a mail-in ballot bill as well, which would ban no excuse mail-in ballots. That would have an impact here in Colorado and a big one, for
But
sure. And then we see.
that was brought in by a Republican Secretary of State on her own. On her own in 2002, she came up with that rule. On her own saying, no, you no longer have to. So you can thank the Republican Party again for that. Because I quite frankly, when they did that in 2002 and I was running elections in a municipality, I went, great. Then we'll just go out and get all these absentee ballots in and the election will be over by election day. And it was. But once
Yeah.
again, it's I
So
don't.
I think the most important thing is that we tell the truth about our elections because the American people, the people of Colorado, can't make rational, logical decisions about whether or not they want mail-in ballots if we're lying to them about it. And they have been lied to about it. When mail-in ballots were sold to the people of Colorado, we were told when reasonably, people said, hang on a second, how are we going to know that these ballots are coming from actual voters? Well, we have signature verification. The signature verification is the identifier, and that is going to make sure that you know absolutely 100%, no question, this ballot is from a real lawful voter. Well, we found that they don't really do signature verification in the large counties. In the smaller ones, they do. I've watched them do it. That's not where the
Well, in an
majority of the theft
ex-count,
happens. So.
you can have just an X, right? I mean, the way I understand the law, too, it's like you don't even have to have a signature. It can be an X, and it just has to be sort of witnessed by somebody. But the same somebody can witness an unlimited number of X's, as I understand it. Then there's nothing there. Well, and one thing I think, too.
And that was a change, though, from what the people were sold. The people were
Oh, yeah.
sold that
Well, no, but the
the
people were
signature
sold
was
on
going to be an
everything.
identifier. Over time, that gets relaxed and relaxed. The more people become comfortable
Well,
and
did they ever
addicted to
think of that
mail-in
wouldn't
voting,
happen?
it gets relaxed. Now they're saying signature verification is a poll tax and we need to get rid of it. Signature verification is the only way that they sold this to people in the first place. So we have to be
Well,
honest
but why
about
did
it.
people believe it? Did anyone actually think that was true? No. They're sold a bill of goods endlessly and they keep on buying this. So the lies. And I don't know when we make Republican. I just finished for the assembly and I watched Gabe Evans go up and just lie his face off to a whole assembly. And 85% of the people just loved it. Immigration, hey, no problem. I'm tough on immigration. Yeah, I'm tough on any enforcement of immigration, is what he meant. But I watched an entire 85% vote for a guy who was lying to them straight to their face. And they seem to be happy about it. And so I don't know what's going to ever change to make, well, never, I guess it's
We're going
mankind.
to jungle primaries anyway,
Yeah, we're going
so
to jungle
talk all
primaries
moot.
anyway.
So, Ash, before we let you go, I want Tina Peters. So I know you want
Yeah,
me
how
to
is
do
she?
something, and I'll let you tease that, and because I noticed that you were going to be writing more on that.
I am, yeah. So I woke up this morning and Tina Peters was calling me. Oh my gosh, I can't believe it, because I've been on her list for months and she's never been able to call me. I was denied by CDOC from being able to visit her. Had to jump through a whole bunch of hoops before I was denied, but then denied nonetheless. I posted about that over the weekend and posted the receipts, the emails that I'd received from CDOC on X. And then suddenly today on Monday,
Wow.
Tina's, it's, I'm sure it's a coincidence.
It is, yeah.
But I mean, she's such a brave lady. She sounded great. We talked about a bunch of stuff, and I have a bunch of notes, and I'm going to be writing that up. It'll probably come out tomorrow. I will be joining Ryan Schuling on 6:30 AM radio tomorrow, and I'll tease some of the insights there as well. I just haven't had a chance today to really sit down and
Well,
process it
that'll
all
be an
yet.
interesting
But
session.
it was
That'll be great because
fantastic.
Ryan
Yeah.
Schuling is not a Tina Peters fan, as far as I can tell.
Well, we'll
There's
see.
less. Yeah. I'm
Ask. Thank
going to say
you.
what I'm going to say regardless. I don't really care.
Well, what time is that going to be on?
8 a.m.
All right. 8 a.m. on what day?
6:30 KHOW
I
tomorrow.
know, but what day? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
I'll be listening for that one.
All right. Ash, thank you.
Thank
As
you, Ash.
always, for
You're
the great
great.
work that
You're
you
wonderful.
do. We'll see
Thanks,
you later.
guys.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Did you want to talk about the assembly there a little bit?
Well, I've already talked about the assembly, but it was disheartening. It was incredibly disheartening to be at an assembly. We had Adam DeVito running against him, and he gave up a speech in which he really didn't do the tough stuff. He really didn't do the things you really needed to do, like going up and saying, "Hey, he has told us he will not be for enforcing the immigration laws. He only wants, quote unquote, gangsters deported. They're the only ones who get deported." And what that means is that the 20 million that arrived under Joe Biden's term, or anybody else who manages to get in across the border, either on the side or otherwise, can do that. And then once they're in, as long as they're not a quote unquote gangster, that's the end. And now that is a popular position for the Americans for Prosperity, because Americans for Prosperity want cheap labor. They want cheap labor for their farms. They want cheap labor for everything else. But there was no one to challenge Gabe Evans. No one who said, "Do you really want this? Do you people really want?" And at least if they did that, at least if we had an honest debate at the assembly of whether the people there want only criminals deported, we would have a chance. But we don't get that. And so it was never discussed. And 85% of people very happy. And it got approved. But the issues were never discussed. And that's the hardest part. That's the hardest part. Because we'll never get, and I think, he sold his soul out to Americans. And I don't really blame him, because the only way you're going to win in that district where the Republicans have no money, the party itself has very little money, is with the tens of millions that the Americans for Prosperity put in. But if you had an honest discussion, at least it would cause the next time the issue comes up, and the issue will come up, of whether we should have Trump's deportation, or should we get rid of ICE, get rid of the Department of Homeland Security, and get rid of everything else. So that's a challenge we always have. That's a challenge that the party has, because it's so many things happen in the Republican Party that if the people really knew it, and they only know it through debate and a real discussion. But it's been so many times, and we have our representatives by far. If you look at the score, the Principles of Liberty score on all our senators and state legislators, most of them get C's and D's. C's and D's. And yet they come back to Adams. Well, not Adams, so we don't have any elected Republicans in the state House or state Senate, but they go out back to their ones and they talk tough. And they say, "Well, I'm really fighting for this and fighting for small government." But when they come up and they arrive in the Capitol, they sell us out and they become co-sponsors of some of the worst bills. There has to be something that we make these people accountable. At least if they say, "Yeah, I agree with the Democrats. I'm really a semi-Democrat myself, but I want your vote anyway. That would be okay. But they go back to their home districts and they sell them how they're rock rib, they're hard conservatives, when in fact they're constantly voting for Democratic bills. And they don't, Democrats don't need their votes. They've got more than enough people do it, but it does become incredibly important. And they say, what are you complaining about? We had a Republican co-sponsor for that. This is a bipartisan bill that kills industries, kills the oil and gas industry, destroys coal industries. We had bipartisan support. And if you talk to the legislatures, they'll say, well, I want to get something done. You're kind of like destroying the state. That's what you want to get done. And then you have some great ones. You have a few great ones down there, and we ought to, I guess, praise them more. But the great ones like Stephanie Luck just said, I don't want to be down there anymore. We don't accomplish anything. The rhinos really rule, and it's no fun. Well, what fun it is to be down at a Capitol in which nobody, the Republicans have no chance to ever pass any legislation, and they can only add on to Democratic legislation. And they get on, they say, well, I slightly improved this awful bill. And you kind of go, yeah, but you gave it support, you gave it cover. And that's the great. At the assembly, only 33 people, a great total of 33 people voted for Adam. 33 people. And I have to say, it's in some ways, I suppose, if you look on the larger scale, which is the Republicans really need to hang on to CD8. Without Americans for Prosperity money, they can't hold it, whether they can't hold it or not, even with the money. And so that's why Trump supports Gabe Evans, not because he agrees with him, or certainly does not agree with Americans for Prosperity, but he's become a practical politician. He realized. That's why Hope Shelferman had to drop out. He said, look, I'm going to withdraw my endorsement for you. And if I withdraw my endorsement and give it to Jeff Hurd, you have no chance to raise funds. You have no chance to do anything. So I need you to withdraw because if you don't, then Jeff Hurd will, in fact, vote Democrats and I won't be able to get my agenda done. So time and time in Colorado, Trump is endorsing people who do not believe in Trump's agenda, but it's just practical politics. And every once in a while, you get the grassroots versus the establishment just laid out bare. And that's happened in Texas. You have John Cornyn, who has been in the Senate, I forget, I think 30 years, more than 30 years, a total establishment tool. And at the last few years, he's kind of voted with Trump, but in previous ones he was absolutely against him. He was for the Russia investigation and against Ken Paxton. Now Ken Paxton is not great as a married man. He's had a divorce. He's getting divorced, and it's kind of an ugly divorce. And he was kind of caught cheating on his wife. Well, I mean, as a practical matter, if that's all there is, how many perfect people do we have? How many perfect people do you have? But there, that the two sides are going head against head, and both have money. In fact, Cornyn has more. He spent $10 million in his initial primary. That initial primary, where the top two go on, and Cornyn came out slightly on top after spending $10 million, and Ken Paxton had like $1 million. So usually, when you get spent outspent 10 to 1. It's really almost impossible to win, but he came in close, and now the polls. So if Trump does not endorse Cornyn, it appears that Paxton will win easily. If Trump does endorse Cornyn, that'll be a close race. But I think at this point, Cornyn did, or rather Paxton did, a brilliant thing. So I'll withdraw if you pass the SAVE Act. And Trump, ooh, that's good. That makes more sense to me. Jacob says to us, the Dems have no money either. The Cesar Chavez hurt the Dems. As a practical matter, they have lots of money because it's not really the party. The DNC has very little money, But all those massive billionaire funds that flow into the nonprofits and out from the nonprofits. Every Colorado candidate gets outspent here, 4 to 1, 10 to 1, 20 to 1, 30 to 1. And that's in part why it's so impossible to win, in addition to the fact of mail ballot harvesting and mail ballots themselves. It'd be interesting if but it takes money to put a ballot thing, do you actually want mail ballot elections? I'm afraid it probably would not pass, but it's worth the effort. If you want a two-party system, you got to have same-day voting. Not that the Democrats won't try to crook that. I mean, they have and they do, but it's much harder. It's much harder to crook same-day balloting. And you have to have Republicans fighting hard. We've got another race coming up just a few days from now. We'll be voting on who's going to be the vice chair of the Republican Party. Sandra Black from El Paso is running, and there's a good Republican grassroots guy running, and so it'll be really interesting to see who wins that, because that'll tell you so much about the party. Because Black was just a supporter of Britta Horn, and Britta Horn, I mean, no one can imagine a worse party chair. Really, and we've had crooks, and we've had just everything, but no one's ever been worse than Britta Horn. So will we get a good vice then? I think we'll come on air. I think the election's April 2nd, and both Julie and I are candidates. I'm not candidates. We're delegates to the State Central Committee, and so we'll be voting. That'll be a key vote. That'll be a key vote for us. And the Republican Party, really, then they'll have, because Horn is going next. She's going to do the resign April 17th, and you have to have an election 30 days after that. And we've got, several candidates. A new one came in, Craig Steiner, endorsed by some good conservatives, Patrick Neville. But the trouble was, it's also endorsed by McNulty and other ones. So we went and looked closely, said, well, maybe this too would be a good one. And then it turns out, he likes to write for Complete Colorado. He calls himself a common sense conservative. And anytime somebody puts a qualifier before the name, before they say common sense, as if conservatives aren't common sense. You have to be a common sense conservative because conservatives are crazy or some title to it. He's a bright guy. He's a capable guy. He'd probably make a good chair if he wanted an establishment hack. But he will not. The one thing that the whole Republican Party is divided on line on one thing, and that's the opt-out. As long as we have unaffiliated voters being able to vote in Republican primaries, you're going to get Democratic-leaning primary voters. We've got a big one for governor now, and it really the Barbara, what's her last name? I forget. But Barbara is the establishment one, and then you have a lot of good people trying to kind of upset her. And I think at the assembly, I'm not even sure Barbara's going to try it. She's already written in, already gotten petitioned, so she'll get on the ballot. And if it was just up to Republicans, she would not win. There'd be a conservative candidate who would win, but it'll be overwhelmed. And that's another fight that it tells you. If somebody says, "Are you for the opt-out?" If you want to know where somebody stands on the great battles of the day, it's whether they're for the opt-out or not. If you want elections that are controlled by Republicans or really controlled by unaffiliated voters who are Democrats, that tells you everything. And that's a great divide that cannot be sort of fixed. All of the elected officials in Colorado, they all vote for the establishment ones because they do not want to have just Republicans deciding who the Republican candidate is. They feel, generally speaking, that they will lose if Republicans get the side. A candidate would come up who's a little closer to Republican principles, and it would just go away. Let's see here. Jacob says the Dems have no money either, and they say, like you said before, to get is having a hard time. So is Hickenlooper. The Cortez and Sanders millionaire tax campaign has sent money to their Republican opponents. We won't know the real polling until after Labor Day. The Democrats are in various, almost all of them, California, Washington, back in Massachusetts, New York. They're all adding increasing millionaire taxes, and all the millionaires are fleeing to Texas and to Florida, and now some other places like Idaho. The one place they're not coming to is Colorado, and they used to. In fact, Palantir left California and came to Denver, and was a real possibility of getting. It's the largest, if you do it by market capitalization, the largest company in Colorado. And we drove them out, and Westward and other ones were thrilled. Yeah, we got rid of Palantir. And they're driving out the oil and gas, they're driving out coal, they're driving out. And Trump, if that wasn't bad enough for Colorado's economy, Trump is moving all the high tech ones out of Boulder. Those ones which work at the University of Colorado, NCAR, and the other ones, they're also leaving. So what is going to be left? What is going to be left? You see that the office buildings down in Colorado are going to be they're selling for dimes on the dollar, dimes on the dollar. So you drive out the Palantirs, you drive out the restaurants with overregulation, and you drive all the other ones. What's going to be left? I mean, if I had to, bet, I would bet short on Denver's economy. There's nothing that's replacing all the ones that they're driving out. And I have a feeling it won't be long, sure, because it's happened in all the other Democrat states, that we'll have a billionaire tax or a millionaire tax. I mean, they would love to have Phil Anschutz move to Texas or Florida or someplace else. And it's really tough. In California, surprisingly, because there's so many Democrats splitting up so much of the Democratic vote, and they have the jungle primaries, that the top two are Republicans. And so if that continues and not enough Democrats drop out, it means you'll get a Republican governor of California. The problem is, as somebody said, the minute a Republican wins, there'll be a recall petition taken out, and they'll try to get him out. So even if forever reasons, the first time in who knows how many years since Reagan imagined, there's going to be a Republican, well, I guess Wilson, there's going to be a Republican governor of California. But they're going to drive him out as fast and as quick as they possibly can. So it's an interesting time to be a Republican in Colorado. Dave Williams, I think, was the best chairman we ever had. Not that he didn't make mistakes. He made plenty of mistakes and some unforced errors, but he managed to raise several million dollars without any establishment money. He managed to get Trump on the ballot, fought the legal, helped fight the legal fight, and he got so many good things done. And he was intelligent. He was highly intelligent. And since he's left, the Republican Party has done one good thing. It's come up. We've fought Britta, and we've driven Britta out. And that took a lot of effort, incredible amount of effort, because she wasn't happy about going. I can't tell you how many people spent how much time. We had a whole pro se army of pro se litigants fighting against her. And we had people like Ann Ferguson and others just working as hard as they possibly could. And they've driven her out. Now, if we could figure out how to spend as much time and effort coming together But the problem is that the opt-out, the Democrats want, I mean, the RINOs want Republican candidates determined by unaffiliated voters. And unaffiliated voters really, in often cases, are Democrats because Democrats often don't have anybody in their primaries. They usually have one person. That's the exception this time. We've got Bennett has an opposition with the Phil Weiser. So that's the first actual fight we've seen in primaries. So maybe not quite as many people will pour into the Republican primary to vote for whoever is the weaker candidate or whoever is the more liberal candidate of the two. But it's going to be an interesting time. It's going to be if the Republican Party can someday come back together, come back and have at least a Republican candidate representing Republican values rather than a Joe O'Dea or other ones. And all the money, there was an article today from a Democrat in the Denver Post saying, oh, the Socialist Democrat won the caucus assembly 2-1. We're dying to get, and so we have to get rid of. We have to go to. He doesn't say what we have to go to, but the caucuses and assemblies are antiquated, and they allow just too few of people to determine it. What they mean is the very rich, the few rich, aren't going to decide it. You have a jungle primary, and the only thing that comes in is big money. Big money determines who goes on thing. They make deals among themselves. So you can see it coming. And Independence Institute will all be for it. All the rhinos will be for it. And I hope we can keep, I mean, I was at a caucus and assembly, and while disappointing, it is at least the people have some chance to see their candidates, some chance to ask them questions, even if they often don't. And it's the only way people can get into a party. If you don't have the caucus and assembly, there's no route. You can't be a PCP. You can become a campaign worker for a rich guy, and that isn't too good. But all the establishment Democrats and establishment Republicans want a jungle primary, and they'll move heaven and hell to get it. And it'll be interesting to see if we can put a fight up and stop it. All right, well, that's it. I want to thank everybody. It's good to be able to get a few words in, and my lovely wife decided that if I get a few words in, that's a few too many. But it's great to see it, and we'll see you again on Wednesday. Thanks very much.